Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, not exactly in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, but on the air. Looky here is probably not appropriate to radio, is it? This is The Horn, broadcasting live from Capitol Hill in the headquarters of the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign, the AHEC campaign. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. That being, of course, the easiest way to go about getting the stream, but you know that. You also know, of course, that there are a number of other ways to go about getting the program on your smartphone or your iPhone, your Android device, what have you. You can always go to get apps like the TuneIn Radio app, the Stitcher Radio app, and take the horn with you wherever you go. Got here Sunday. And, of course, as I noted last night via Twitter and Facebook, and both of those are just Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, if you want to follow, or friend up or whatever. In either instance, I put it out there that we had late afternoon meetings, and we did, in fact, and there's some stuff developing, good stuff coming along in the effort to end the Appalachian apocalypse that is mountaintop removal. The AHEC campaign is working, hammer and tongs to get stuff done. More meetings this week, but hopefully no more shows missed. It's possible there will be, but not entirely, not the whole week, maybe another night. At any rate, we'll be here through Friday, come home of the weekend, home for a week, and then back here for a week or two, but we will have shows. So That's where that is. Now, Agnes is producing from the home studio, and so we will have regular phone calls in later on in the program. General reminder, because we're coming up on the end of the month, we are still trying to stay even with the fundraising goal for any given month, and right now we are behind. We're behind by about $400. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and I always try to give the mail address. I had a tweet on my timeline earlier asking me to stop calling. The word was belittling the U.S. Postal Service by referring to it as snail mail. I wasn't trying to belittle anything. But, yeah, there's a regular old traditional carbon-intensive over-the-ground mail address for those of you who want to support the program but don't want to use the electronic means. That's fine. That address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, West Virginia, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y-W-V, 25801. And that is, any money orders, checks, anything, just make them payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid. And I told you Friday, boss man Wayne won't be going to the mailbox to pick stuff up until he is considerably rehabilitated. There were dramatic turns for the good over the weekend. I'll let you know now with Boss Man Wayne. He is up and sitting up, still not completely well, long way from completely well, but considerably better than he has been over the past several days. And my God, what a tough man. What a tough, tough man. Thank you for all the good wishes you sent his way. So we missed Moran Monday. And lo and behold, I wasn't really thinking about it when we come up here to do work on the AIC Act and don't really pay a lot of attention to other stuff that is going on here, because our focus is kind of on ending the poisoning and the killing that is associated with mountaintop removal. So I wasn't really thinking about the fact that there'd be a bunch of shenanigans going on across the street with our neighbors at the Supreme Court. But there are. My word. Yesterday it was freezing and wet and cold and just crappy. And yet there were people already... looked like they were camping out, either, you know, the way people camp out for a new Star Wars movie or some sort of concert. But they were there, and people I talked to were there because they wanted to see justice done, and they wanted to see the bigotry associated with marriage in this country eliminated. And they waited in the rain, the spitting snow, the cold winds. Stand by. All right, sorry about that. When one's colleague is down in the wilds of Washington, D.C., you take the call. Brother Bo checking in. But anyway, so I had nice conversations with folks who were hoping to see the Supreme Court surprisingly do the right thing, and it will be a surprise if they do the right thing. This Supreme Court, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, make the tawny court look liberal. You know, the folks that gave us Dred Scott. And then today, oh my God, I walked outside and wow. I'd say a couple of thousand people at the very least. People in favor of constitutional rights and marriage equality on one side of the street, and on the other side, the freaks, the weirdos, the religio zombies, the bigots, the sexists, the homophobes, screaming.
One man, one woman.
And they had their great big giant American flag. Like they're the onlyest ones who get to call themselves Americans. Yeah. And they yelled across the street at each other and chanted and whatnot. And if you check my Twitter feed, you will find... And somehow or another, when I saw this, it felt grievous. Because there was a huge contingent of persons of color, black folks, walking around with placards that say, "Children deserve a mom and a dad." Holy mackerel. You know, because and opposed to marriage equality, opposed to the constitutional rights being extended to a segment of the population that is not... Yeah, you get it. And so I just... Well, later that... A little bit later, I tweeted a photo I took of them, noting that, ironically, the word irony apparently does not exist for these folks. Because I got to thinking, do you reckon, or is there any data to support it? Are there any histories, you know, primary sources that would tell us that even one gay person was involved in the civil rights struggle of the 50s and 60s and into the 70s? Even one. And if even one gay person marched for civil rights for an oppressed minority, is that not kind of all in vain? When people for whom that individual or those individuals marched show up to deny rights to other people. I couldn't help thinking about it in those terms. Or maybe, is that a mark of freedom? Is it a mark of the distance that we've traveled in those generations? That now people who were treated not as second-class citizens but as third-class ones feel free enough to come to Washington, D.C. and demand that other people be denied rights? Be denied the constitutional empowerment that is supposedly guaranteed under the Due Process Clause to every person? Maybe it is. Maybe, absolutely. Maybe that's a mark of freedom. Freedom, the freedom to be a bigot, a sexist, a homophobe. And since there's more arguments going on tomorrow, I imagine there will be more freaks out tomorrow. I'll try to go out and get a few more pictures of them, send them to Agnes, and let her put them on the website. I've got a real dandy here. Late this afternoon, there was a guy in an overcoat and a top hat screaming at other people, telling them how wrong they were for wanting to have the full panoply of constitutional rights. I snapped a picture of him. and he had his signs. He had his sign with him. Everybody had a sign. Signs everywhere, a sign. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the signs? Yeah. His was a sign that said, psychologists are for a normal marriage. Psychologists are for a normal marriage. And in that moment, I channeled Peter Godbold, and I thought, I was behaving myself. This was no fun getting arrested in D.C. Oh, but Lordy, I wanted to, hey, buddy, to what extent is normal anything more than a setting on a dryer? Because, you know, that's what Peter says. Psychologists are for a normal marriage. And in his screaming, really screaming, he was saying things like, I've counseled gay people who have gone on to become normal and heterosexual, and they've married people, and they've become parents in a heterosexual marriage, and I know it works, but I can't do that because in the state of Maryland that's illegal now, and if I do that they'll take away my license. Well, they'll take away your license, Doc, for being a quack. So this guy wants the right to be able to go and engage in the same kind of psychological chicanery, I suppose, that Marcus Bachmann gets into, ex-gay therapy. Here now, come on over here. We're going to watch a hockey game, and all that gay is just going to go right away out of you. I love it. I just got a text from Margie, who was back at home in West Virginia. She said, "Just wanted to say I love you, and remember not to talk to the crazy strangers." Well, Margie, this is your old dad we're talking about. Talking to the crazy strangers is, but no, I didn't. Yeah, this guy, really, I'll post it, I'll send the picture to Agnes and let her post it on the website. This guy looked like somebody you wouldn't let your children around. Overcoat, black gloves, black fedora, pinched in old guy face. I don't know, maybe kind of like Freddy Krueger, if he was semi-respectable. Yeah. Michael, in Sevastopol, subject line, irony. Bayard Rustin was one of the primary organizers of the March on Washington. Gay. But I guess that becomes an inconvenient truth, doesn't it, Michael? For these freaks. Oh my God. I will. I'll get the photos to Agnes as soon as I possibly can. It's depressing. To see people that there are still a significant number of other Americans would like to see them deprived of their rights, and they're standing there right alongside them and arguing to deprive others of theirs. Yeah. Homo nomo. Jeez. And I mention that because, well, do you remember, what was it, right after CPAC, was it last week we talked about this, the what was his name, Bocephus J. Boogermunch? Actual name was, last name was Terry, came from Towson University, the one who talked about, I've studied American history and literature and stuff, and us white people, we're under attack. Remember that guy? Well, yeah, it turns out he's from Towson University over in Maryland, I believe. And he was interviewed after he started the big dust-up there at the CPAC clavern. And he said... African Americans should be allowed to vote in Africa, and that he'd be fine if he lived in a society where black folks are permanently subservient to whites. Well, he's got a buddy, this Bocephus J. Boogermunch, and his buddy is also at Towson. Towson. His buddy is Matthew Heimbach. Yeah, this is one of those neo-maxi zoom dweebies who walks around wearing a Confederate flag tie. He calls himself Commander Heimbach. He and Scott Terry is the real name of Bocephus J. Boogermunch. Well, Heimbach and Terry run a hate group at Towson University. Didn't it used to be Towson State? But their hate group is called the White Student Union. And they've announced that they're going to do nighttime patrols. Commander Heimbach on patrol. Right? Some members of the group, equipped with flashlights, will conduct on-campus safety walks, and female members will carry pepper spray in an attempt to protect students from various crimes like sexual assaults and robberies, WSU President Matthew Heimbach said. White Student Union. These are they're a vigilante group on a college campus, endorsed by the university. Or at least permitted to exist. And his buddy, Scott Terry, Bocephus J. Boogermunch, has said that people of African descent should do their voting in Africa. And lo and behold, those very people of African descent, kind of the way I'm of Scott's descent, you know, whatever, were standing there in front of the Supreme Court of the United States today, arguing that people should be denied essential constitutional rights, not because of the color of their skin, but because the way they are wired to have sex. That makes my head hurt. That makes my, if it's a soul, it makes my soul ache. And the worst part of it is it's all driven by the religion industry. the religion industry. Just as is the case with abortion, these people cannot come to grips with the fact that their opposition to marriage equality derives from either one or two sources, but not both. On the one hand, they can't understand that what they are arguing about is their desire to force their religious tenets on people who do not necessarily share them. Or two, they do understand that, and they've got more than a soupçon of theocrat in them, and they really do want to turn this country into a religious dictatorship. It could be one, it can be the other, maybe. It really can't be both, and it can't be anything else. You cannot make a non-religious argument against abortion or against marriage equality. You simply can't, because that argument does not exist. Because the minute you start arguing about who should or should not be able to get married, then you're admitting that you think there are different classifications of people, and the only way you can reach that classification is to say, well, the Bible told me so, or the Quran, or the Bhagavad Gita, or the Rig Veda, or the Norse, the Icelandic sagas, or, you know, the Popol Vuh, or the Egyptian Book of the Dead, that some religious device tells you this. And I, honest to God, don't know which is more likely. You tell me. Is it more likely that they are too ignorant to realize that the entirety of their argument is religious in nature, and they have no comprehension whatsoever of the First Amendment and the fact that they do not have the right to enforce their beliefs through government upon us, we who do not share their beliefs? Or are they just downright theocrats, and they really do yearn for a religious dictatorship in this country? No, I understand Texas Betsy. She says, many black people are on the side of equal marriage. Don't judge them all based on the freaks in D.C. And I'm not. But to ignore the irony, the pathetic, tragic irony of what I saw today is in its own way a refusal to live in reality world. Most of the time, when we talk about the effect that the religion industry has on this country, we talk about white evangelists and televangelists and hucksters and carny freaks and pitch. Yeah, but we forget that there is a very powerful voice that is the church in the black community, and that it is working anti-rights, anti-human mischief. Texas Betsy noting, Bob, we agree as a society that adults should not marry children, and that does not have any religious base. That's not that argument. The gay marriage argument, you can't make it without having, you cannot have the gay marriage argument without engaging in some sort of religious flummery. And in point of fact, it's an open question as to whether or not we agree in this country or as a society that adults should not marry children. Because, well, each state has different age of consent laws. Is a 15-year-old a child? There are states at least one where the age of consent is 15. I think there's still a state where the age of consent is 14. Is that Arkansas, Fritz? In West by God, Virginia, the age of consent is 16. At the tender age of 16 years, we as a society have determined that a person can get married. Or have sex. They just can't have a beer. Or vote yet. Or be drafted into the military, should that eventuality come around. Marty with a trenchant observation. Children deserve a mom and a dad. Okay, says Marty. Ban divorce. Of course, they'd have more scriptural authority, these religious freaks would. If they would move along those lines, because, you know, their Savior said that. Ban divorce. He wasn't kidding. He didn't, there wasn't any weasel room. Just saying. Marty noting, he says, and then there are the Mormons where a little girl of what, 10, can be married to some church elder? Well, yes. And, of course, all the cliches were on display this morning and this afternoon. Well, this will lead to one man and polygamy. And I looked at somebody, and, you know, one sneaks out every now and then. Hey, I got two wives, and it's mighty bigamy. Yeah, I'll be here all week. Try the veal. And yet there is, and I believe in the arguments in the court today, a question was asked, can you point to any damage to heterosexual marriage? And the guy who was arguing in favor of bigotry said, no, ma'am, sorry. Okie dokie. So, no, all the and I got to thinking, you know, these freaks always always turn to, well, what about? Yeah, I mean, if we let the gays get married, next thing you know, somebody's going to be marrying their parrot or their doggy, or they're going to. What's wrong with polygamy? Why can't we do that? And I just don't understand why their minds go there. But they do. But every now and then I like to try to think a little bit like them. You know, you just kind of wander into the muck and then you wander back out. And why is it that they're fetid, fervid dreams always turn to, you know, the one man that's got the four wifeys. You ever notice that? That's all they ever talk about. Why do their minds never turn to one woman who has four husbands? Well, that's just gross. No, it's not. I mean, you got four guys there. You've always got the possibility for a great. You've always got a good two on two pickup basketball game. You've got a perfect foursome for golf. But they never think like that. And I find it curious. Jim apparently doesn't understand my reference to theocracy. He says, there are many Catholics and others in many faiths who do not oppose marriage equality, and yet and I don't understand those people. I don't understand how they can be a member of that church when their church does oppose marriage equality. And not just tepidly, but hotly. I don't get it. But then again, I don't get religion, so probably not surprising. But that's the whole point. You either, if you are an opponent of marriage equality, you either do it ignorant of the fact that you're trying to foist your religious beliefs on people, or you do it intending to foist your religious beliefs on people, and that is theocratic. And see, we're off and running now. Jay writing in, age of consent. The age of consent in Colorado is 14, with the caveat that one partner can be no more than 10 years older than the other. So in Colorado, a 14-year-old can marry up to a 24-year-old. That's still not very reassuring. New York. If either applicant is under 14 years of age, a marriage license cannot be issued. Either under 14. Otherwise, well, going to the chapel and we're just barely teenagers and we're... Right. And here's the list. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Age of consent in the United States. Alabama, 16. Alaska, 16. Arizona, 18. Well, look at that. Arkansas, 16. Sorry, Fritz. Colorado, this is 15. Connecticut, 15. D.C., 16. Delaware, 16. Idaho, 14. Lucky it's not 12. Hawaii, 14. Talibandiana, 16. Kansas, 16. Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, 16. Got to wait till you're 17 in New Mexico. Fifteen in old Virginia. Ain't that sweet? Jesus. But when I looked... When I looked at the crowds assembled, I was more convinced than I have heretofore been of the correctness of my assertion that this country is in the middle of a cold civil war. Because those people are not coming together. The bigots unrepentant and unreconstructible are going to be with us for a while yet. And there is no way that they're going to... Because their opposition to gay marriage is not based on some principled stand. It is as was their parents' and grandparents' opposition to civil rights. Talking about the white folks here. It is ingrained in them as a function not of religious love, but of social hate. And they cannot wrap their minds around tolerance or inclusiveness. They just cannot. And so tomorrow, I will go wandering out onto the streets of Washington, D.C. to see if they're all back, because there's another day of argument tomorrow. And does anybody, for instance, with the Affordable Care Act decision in the backs of our minds, in which the Supreme Court gave... power or gave its assent to the individual mandate in the commercialized portion of the Affordable Care Act, but gutted the universal health care portion of it. And really, by the way, for those of us who want universal health care, universal single-payer health care, we might do well to start referring to Medicaid by what it is. And that's what they did. The Supreme Court of the United States struck down the portion of the Affordable Care Act that contained universal single-payer health care. If you understand it in that light, it becomes a much different analysis. Much more different analysis. And so thinking about that, and thinking about the questioning that they put forward on the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and considering that, do you have any faith, and faith is probably the wrong word to use here, do you have any willingness to think that the Supreme Court of the United States will get this right? Because while I've seen news stories that say, well, you know, the Supreme Court could do this, they could do that, blah, 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 there's only one right answer. Now, there's an answer that will make people in California who want to be able to engage in marriage happy. And that is to overturn Prop 8. But it's not the right answer. There is only one right answer to a due process question. There is only one way to answer this that gets it right. Because if a question is put on these grounds before the court and they reach any kind of decision except to say that all people do have the same rights, it's wrong. And the only right answer is to say that everybody in this country and in the several states, by operation of the 14th Amendment, equal protection and due process, that marriage is just marriage. And to the extent that it's a function of government, government cannot exclude one group from marriage at the expense or the cost of their rights. That's the only right answer. In short, the only right answer is to say that people can get married in California and that people can get married in Alabamistan and that gay people can get married in Talibandiana and Idahostan. So that led me, in turn, to think about the nexus between the marriage equality argument and health care, which is sort of an extension of my cold Civil War theory. And that's this. And there's a little bit of hypothetical, speculative what-if-ery about it. But still. What if the Supreme Court actually gets this right? Now, we know that the rats will be howling. There's a possibility, you know, Chief Justice Roberts is that, you know, that dead-eyed freak those ice cold blue eyes that are looking a million miles away. He had as his special guest in the audience for the arguments his lesbian cousin. Do I know why? No. But I saw that brooded about a bit as a, well, maybe he'll do the right thing. You know what? I think there are four members of the court who would simply say the 14th Amendment means what the 14th Amendment says. And due process and equal protection, and coupled with concepts of full faith and credit, mean that if people are gay and get married in California, that marriage must be recognized in Alabama. Right? So there's four votes. John Roberts. Everybody's acting like precious Anthony Kennedy is the key here, but I think the Chief Justice may be the key here, just as he was in the Affordable Care Act argument. But consider this. Let us for a moment speculate and have a look at what this country will look like if by some outside chance operation of statistics and accident, declares that the 14th Amendment means what it means, and that gay people can get married in Alabama or California, in Hawaii or New Hampshire, in North Carolina or North Dakota, in West Virginia or New Mexico. Let's say they do that. And we have marriage equality in all 50 states. Then what does this country look like? Consider this hypothetical. In that case, you could, and we're going to consider folks, working class folks, who are on the lower end of the economic ladder. In that case, you can be poor and gay in California and get married, and you can be poor and gay in Alabama and get married. If you're poor and gay and married in California, you can also access universal single-payer health care for the poor via the Medicaid expansion. If you are poor and gay and married in Alabama, you can go die. And as Alan Grayson said, die quickly. Fascinating, huh? Does that present, is there any more stark picture of just what a plessyized society we are moving toward? Of the retrograde motion towards separate but equal that exists in this country? Because that is a brutal, in the purest sense of the word, reality. Imagine that. That the Supreme Court, none of whose membership has changed in the time between the two decisions we're discussing here, will have decided, or may decide, may have decided that on the one hand, it is illegal to make the states take care of the health care needs of their working poor. But on the other hand, that their rights are violated if they happen to be gay and they can't get married. Doesn't that make your head spin a little bit? Doesn't that make you feel just a little bit like we're living in bizarre world? Only because we are. And that's what I mean by cold civil war. That's what I mean by a Plessyized society. A society that has become defined by its willingness to create a culture that enshrines prejudice and bigotry. Wow. And that's what the future looks like to me. I badly want marriage equality. But I also have to ask what good it is. If your spouse, be you gay or straight, what good is marriage equality if you have to die quickly when you get sick? And that's just that's the reality as I understand it. And I see nothing to suggest that that's not the road we're going down. Do you have evidence to suggest it is? There is not? Because it sure looks like it to me. So we'll take a break and come back. The phone lines are open, and there's certainly more stuff to get into on this Titanic Tuesday. Phone lines are open at 304-658-3333. Agnes is taking your calls this evening, and she will pipe them through to me. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Big thanks go out to Angry, the Angry Architect, for his help this evening in keeping the fundraising going. You can jump in, too. We try to raise about $150 a night. And I'm sure he'd like a little help. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you very much. So chime in if you want to. We'll get the second hour started in short order. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Back shortly. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy, after a brief reboot, not as brief as I would have liked it to have been, but after a brief reboot, we are indeed back at it. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2013, and we are broadcasting live from AKE headquarters, A-C-H-E, AKE headquarters, the AKE campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign headquarters in Washington, D.C. And we're going to get back to, well, I had to reboot stuff because things inexplicably go sideways, and sometimes there's little to be done about it except to reboot. So thanks for your patience. I appreciate it. Meanwhile, quick trip to the mailbox. Yeah, just a minute. Things are actually technically a little bit smoother than they were the last time here. Figured out that a big part of our problem, and in fact a big part of the problems we were having with Dr. Bill's program, had to do with a piece of crappy equipment that I was using. This coming in from Kate, back in Montana, asking, she got in a little bit late, but did I, yes, I did do an update on Boss Man Wayne. He is making significant improvement. They've gotten all the lines and hoses and things that go ping out of his arms and stuff, and he's been doing some sitting up and some talking and communicating well. He is, as one would expect of someone who had had a massive heart attack, still quite exhausted, but making dramatic improvement. And Kate says she kind of got lost in the Medicaid/marriage argument. It just boils down to this. We are moving into a more stratified, more separate but equal society, and that I put quotes around that, separate but equal. It's a Plessy society in which people are separate and they are not equal. So that it is possible if marriage equality were simply to be said to be the law of the land, so that gay people could get married in Alabama as well as California, that you could actually have a situation where you could be poor, gay, and married in California and have access to universal single-payer health care via the Medicaid expansion. And yet if you were poor, gay, and married in Alabama, you get to die quickly because the Supreme Court created that separation when they said that the for-profit part of the Affordable Care Act could go through, but the part of it that was basically a universal single-payer system had to go, and that the states could not be compelled to participate in it. Spend any time at all with that, and it's lunacy. But consider that world. And you begin to see what an upside-down, topsy-turvy, bass-ackward place this really is. Philip, writing in, says, after we successfully battle for and achieve the Marriage Equality Act, can we adopt the Radio Equality Act as our next goal? I want the Horn to achieve the same degree of signal clarity and lack of transmission problems the other more mundane and far less informative stations have. Please don't be offended, Bob, but much as I enjoy Agnes's classical piano playing and the contributions of the West Virginia Philharmonic backing her, it's you and Dr. Bill and the callers I really want to hear. I hope my damned lump sum and disability checks come soon so I can contribute sufficiently to try to help end the tinkering of the National Security Agency that's just down the road with my reception. Processing has been consolidated to remote sites to save money, and consequently, it will be May before I see any disability income. What's worse, I can't get angry at any government agencies because as a federal employee, I understand how dysfunctional they've been made by repeated budget cuts and had to work under the same constraints. Earlier, with regard to the whole marriage discussion under the subject line of a civil society, Philip wrote, "Years ago, I worked with an ersatz black nationalist. He always spoke of going home to Africa, so I asked him when he had lived there. He hadn't, but informed me that he wanted to leave the country to me and other Europeans because it was really our country. I responded that he should stay and help pay for my fare to Ireland because his people had been in this country much longer and contributed much more than mine had in three generations. I told him that given his people's contribution, he had a much better claim to being an American than I and should be the one to remain. He was taken aback, smiled, and we were friendly from that time until we were laid off. I'm weary, says Philip, of whites who regard this country as theirs, and I remember my older people's stories of when they weren't regarded as white. Many people would scoff that folks as pale as us weren't regarded as white, but we weren't circa 1830 and have forgotten our history and assimilated in part by accepting American racism. Luckily, the White Rose Society and the Horn feature Dr. Bill and Dr. Keith Lilly to remind us of our real history, and I am truly grateful. As far as gay marriage, I've never tried it, says Philip. I'm staidly and boringly monogamous and have been married to the same woman for 24 years. But I see the divorce rate among heterosexuals and have decided that they are the last group that should be telling other folks what constitutes a legitimate marriage. Moreover, if we are truly a country in which religions do not determine the laws, govern how everyone lives, then let's stop the crap about gay marriage and women's reproductive rights. Many religious folks hate and fear sex outside of stringent religious constraints, and so I wish they would honor their fears, refrain from the act they regard as disgusting and animalistic, and by doing so, go the way of the Shakers. Hey, quit being so rough on the Shakers. Then we could work on a truly civil society in which hatred masking as religion had no say." Hear, hear. And speaking of which, I don't know if you caught this, but up in Idaho, Stan, the legislators have passed a law, and it has no real force and effect, no teeth, so to speak, but they've passed a law calling for the FCC to tighten the rules so that they're on broadcast FCC censored, and, you know, the FCC is a censoring agency, that it is, I mean, it just is. That's what it's there for. It's there to make sure that nobody says booger when the FCC says that it's not the time that's fit for saying booger on the allegedly public but entirely corporatized airwaves. And they want these religiously motivated freaks are calling for the FCC to ban any mention, any reference to premarital sex between 6 and 10 p.m. when the cheerins are watching the television box. I am, as they say, not kidding. That's what I'm talking. That's what I mean when I talk about these people wanting theocracy, fascist theocracy, and they would be as happy as could be to have it, as long as it's their theocracy and not somebody else's. Because, of course, if you said, okay, we can have, for instance, prayer in schools, and on Monday everybody's going to pray a Muslim prayer, and on Tuesday we're going to pray Hindu, And on Wednesday, we'll pray some sort of Christian prayer. And on Thursday, it'll be Buddhist. And, well, Friday, maybe we'll give the atheists a break. Well, they wouldn't think much of that, would they? They'd be up in arms, so to speak. Once again, the First Amendment being flogged as little more than a life support system for the religion industry. Idaho. Jeebus. Really? Idaho? But yeah, really. Idaho. Ran across a story yesterday, and this goes to kind of goes to the heart of what I was talking about earlier. In regard to the separate and highly unequal United States that the rats on the Supreme Court have created. Comes out of Tennessee. And it reminds me of a short story by Shirley Jackson from many years ago called The Lottery. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. Well, lo and behold, and again, it was Tennessee. It was in Tennessee, of course, where the fire department arrived to watch a man's house burn to the ground because he had not paid for his fire protection service. He hadn't paid his protection, so they stood around and watched his house burn to the ground. Well, it's also in Tennessee that apparently, and Tennessee's Medicaid program is called TennCare. And, of course, Tennessee don't want none of that socialist Medicaid expansion, right? Here's what people are reduced to in Tennessee. In the New York Times, in a story by Abby Goodenough, I don't know, G-O-O-D-N-O-U-G-H, Smith. Two nights a year, Tennessee holds a health care lottery of sorts, giving the medically desperate a chance to get help. That sentence alone should set you screaming. It did me. The headline of the newspaper story, by the way, is Tennessee Race for Medicaid, Dial Fast and Try Again. God, this is like one of those little giveaways on the radio when I was a kid. Be caller 10 and you'll have two tickets to the upcoming Burnt Toast concert. State residents who have high medical bills but would not normally qualify for Medicaid can call a state phone line and request an application, but the window is tight. The line shuts down after 2,500 calls, typically within an hour, and the demand is so high that it is difficult to get through. Applicants have to be elderly, blind, disabled, or the caretaker relative of a child who qualifies for Medicaid, known as TennCare. Their medical debt has to be high enough that if they paid it, their income would fall below a certain threshold. Not many people end up qualifying, but that does not stop thousands from trying. Russell Overby, a lawyer with the Legal Aid Society of Nashville, said, "It's like the Oklahoma land rush for an hour. We encourage people to use multiple phones and to dial and dial and dial." The phone line opened up at 6 p.m. on Thursday for the first time in 6 months. At 5:58, Ida Gordon of Nashville picked up her cordless phone and started dialing. Ms. Gordon, 63, had qualified for TennCare until her grandson, who had been in her custody, graduated from high school last spring. Now she's uninsured, with crippling arthritis and a few recent trips to the emergency room haunting her. "I don't ask for that much," Ms. Gordon said as she got her first busy signal, hanging up and fruitlessly trying again and then again. I just want some insurance. Bill Haslam is the governor of Tennessee. He's a God-fearing, upstanding, family value, and Christian Republican. So he's expected, maybe he already has by now, expected to decide whether to support the Medicaid expansion that's offered in the Affordable Care Act. If Tennessee opts into the expansion, according to the article from the New York Times, that would mean 180,000 more people would have insurance by 2019. And those 180,000 people are people who would qualify at 138% of the federal poverty level. Now, this is the reality. Mrs. Gordon, who is referred to in this article, the one who dialed and dialed, she and her husband live on a disability check that her husband receives, whose health was destroyed as a member of the workforce. They live on $780 a month. Right now, they're too rich. Let that settle in. They are too rich to have health care. They would likely qualify if the Medicaid expansion goes through. Meanwhile, the teabaggers who have a stranglehold on the Tennessee legislature don't want that government insurance going along. A lottery, really. A lottery. To determine at its most basic level who lives and who dies in the state of Tennessee. Dumb, blind luck as to which phone call gets an automated answering machine and which phone call gets a busy signal. 2,500 phone calls in 1 hour. Just to have a chance to say, please, may I please not be put to death? Because that's what the absence of health care is in this country. It is a death sentence that ticks off day after day after day after day as life slips away from people who have worked in this glorious free market capitalist economy, who have given everything they have. And past their ability to contribute more blood, sweat, toil, and tears into the economy, are cast aside to fend for themselves, hope for the best, and hope in one hand and in the other, and see which one fills up fastest. Stunning, isn't it? Yeah. Agnes tells me that Bill is calling from Cleveland. Are you there, Bill?
I guess I am. Let me check. Yeah.
Yep.
It's me, all right. I can tell by the size of my stomach.
All right. Sounds good.
How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm doing a slow burn. First thing I found this morning was that my health aide and helped yourself to my computer programs. They're old. I'm still running XP, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll have to get, we have a friend who was going to help me out with that. A couple of the listeners are experts in that field. And one of them works with some fine musicians. Man, did I learn a lot through him about that group. I knew about them, but I didn't know what they were really capable of doing. And then there's a fellow up from near Akron who's actually stopped and helped me with the computer, another good member. But as I say, that's something I've never talked about, but anybody, when you deal with these health aid people, man, oh, man, oh, man, look out. Don't leave anything laying around. Because whoever set that program up really, I sometimes think they set up government programs to fail so they can point a finger at it.
I agree.
And the one fella, when I couldn't find the title to the WPA book, man, he jumped that thing like, I've seen dogs that didn't grab a bone that fast. It was great because I have the book again. That's why Dr. Bill has really got me in the area that I am just totally, I feel like the most ignorant SOB in the world when he starts talking. Because I didn't have any concept of a lot of this stuff that I'd call under the table. It was done in the beginning. And we're still stuck with.
Oh yeah, that whole
you today.
Yeah, a lot of the nobility goes away, doesn't it, when you start realizing that this was a matter of backroom deals and skullduggery and backstabbing and rib shiving and yeah.
Yeah, and those are some of their better points.
but no, don't feel ignorant, Bill, because that is not if Dr. Bill heard that, he'd go, oh no. Soak it all up and process it.
Sarcasm is a second language with me. Because if you don't get that way, you can't face this stuff. You can't point a finger at it and get a laugh. Because the laugh makes you think even harder as to how crappy things can be. It's not a real laugh. It's, how are you doing down there with these folks? Are they acting like they're caught on to anything?
No, the people. I mean, we're talking with a lot of people who really, really get it. The problem though is on the House of Representatives side. We've got to get through. We've got to get through a wall of ignorance and denial that's funded by the coal industry.
And a wall of money.
With that too.
They throw out at everybody.
Yeah.
It's been that way for a long time. One of my favorite stories is Simon Cameron, if you're familiar with the name, was Lincoln's first Secretary of War because he delivered Pennsylvania.
Right, and he was a grifter.
He delivered a vote, you know.
Right.
And the next thing you know, he was buying... He bought uniforms that were really good until it rained, and they fell apart in the rain. And the cloth had a name that most people would recognize. They called it shoddy. And that was the regular name. And that's kind of worked its way into our dictionary.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
But I did know that Simon Cameron was if it wasn't nailed down, Simon Cameron wanted it.
Yep, that's the guy. And what did Lincoln gave him a good job, made him ambassador to Moscow.
I find that hilarious.
Weather up there, Simon.
Take your good galoshes, Simon.
Yeah. It's just, it's so, I look at you guys and I just see how tough it is. And I think back to the anti-war days and we were dealing with insanity, you know. And that's why, I remember those days real well. I wanted to join the service in 60. And he said, oh, you're short, you're this, you're that, you're a bad eye, and that. Man, in about 66, they're calling me up. We can change your classification. The hell you can, buddy.
Yeah, I'll take a pass now.
Now you want me because, hey, go out there and stop a bullet, that boy, you know. That was their motto. I worked for a company where the boss man was, he would hand out John Birch Society books to those who, you know, that he could get to read. Pretty sick stuff. But they're back again. When they beat Goldwater, we thought we'd put an end to this stuff, but it's back again. In force.
Well, yeah, the teabaggers are nothing but, rebranded Birchers.
I mean, you'll be gone all week, right?
Yeah, I'm here through Friday and then home for the weekend and then be home for.
I hope that you can, some of these people got persuadable to the change of society that we need badly. But, I won't see it because of my age. And I thought I saw it when the 60s ended. I thought I had seen the stepping up into a new situation, a good situation. It kind of gets me. You know? But when I hit the roof this morning, I was talking to a friend of ours, Columbus. I said, what the heck does somebody grab a bunch of computer stuff for? What are they going to do?
So what, did they just boost your stuff, Bill, this person?
Yeah.
Did you tell the company?
Yeah, I talked to them, and they said, well, you want to file a complaint? I said, why? I said, I can't prove it. Maybe I know too much about the legal system. And if you put somebody in pay for anything, the only thing that it does when you complain is they get rid of these people. And then they go out and they hire somebody else for little or nothing. And you know, Bob, the old story about you get what you pay for?
Sure.
And there's a certain amount of truth to that when you're just not paying people enough to survive. And I don't know who set up this program, but every time they set up a program for older people, or anybody, work. It has you going, my God, they actually do this? And this is what they, you know, this is what they expect us to buy into? And, you know, I live in senior citizen building that has a bunch of wonderful people who are European and from Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
They still think Tito is running this country. And, unfortunately, they were so busy surviving, they didn't really notice what was going on around them. Can't say much, you can't do much, and you just hope for the best. There's a lot of good people in there, too, so one of those things, you know. They're down there trying to reach people that are supposedly the leadership of this country. You're sitting there saying, are you kidding me? This is the leadership? Devil take the worst. If this is the leadership, let me see the other guys for a minute here. Just to see where they're at. But anyway, I'm sure there are good folks waiting to talk, and I'll let them. I'm not.
Yeah, you're doing just fine, Bill. But it is good to hear from you.
Now, it's my pleasure just to talk with you, Bob, because all we can do is give you a little moral. And the best we can do.
Well, I bet that goes a long way. You'd be surprised.
Well, there are some people who are cool, and that's an important part to keep it going. It's tough to keep it going. I know the cost of operating. Dr. Dillon is sick to listen to. And I'm so glad you got him because it's fun to learn something new.
And you know, I got to thinking about it. If he gets serious about just going through the Federalist Papers, there's 5 years worth of shows there. Because there's a lot of Federalist Papers. You still there, Bill? I guess I lost Bill. I'm sorry about that. But I'm glad to hear when people like Bill there in Cleveland talks about Dr. Bill being important and the content and the material being necessary and important. Because, well, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Having access to what Dr. Bill is offering is really the only possible antidote to the outright mendacity of people like David Barton and these wall builders. When this country operates on a history, and a country's history is part of its operating system, when the history it's operating on is baloney, well, then what's everything else that it's riding on? It's baloney-influenced. Well, shoot. I'm being told that the sound is going sideways. Thanks, Sandra. I appreciate knowing. Okay. Sounds good. That may have been only during the time when the car was going on. Kate writing in, "Oh, say it ain't so. If Tennessee opts in for the Medicaid expansion, that would decrease the number of folks in the parking lot in 10-degree weather or in 100-degree heat and humidity waiting to get into the remote area clinics. This month we treated over 800 in Knoxville and over 500 in Pigeon Forge. We don't ask questions. We treat anyone who shows up. We can take only so many folks depending on the number of professionals who volunteer their services. In Pigeon Forge, we had a professional in nursing who was originally from Canada. She was amazed by the health don't care we have here in the States. I haven't been home long enough to find out what Ireland's governor's done, Kate says, regarding opting in. It won't matter. We'll just have to learn to die. Quickly. That is the Republican plan for health care. So, we are coming up on the third hour. Thanks, Kate, for the note. That's the tagline of the night. The health don't care we have in the United States. A quick kind of health care. Call it what it is. Health don't care. So a brief break and a reboot and a comeback in that order. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Herald. Thank you.
We'll be right back. It's Tuesday, March 26, 2013.
The war is on.
Water wars in the U.S.
We're down about half the number of monarchs, and this is serious.
Bad year for butterflies. Exxon fined for Yellowstone River pipeline spill. Russia stockpiling snow for the 2014 Winter Olympics. Plus, Apple Computers goes renewable.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The global warming advocate is as wrong as anybody could be about anything, folks. It's a hoax. There is no man-made global warming.
Yes, that is still Rush Limbaugh's story, and he's still sticking to it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, it seems no matter how many studies, no matter how much information, no matter how many disasters, hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, drought, Rush Limbaugh and the deniers on the right are going to stick to their story, I want to say come hell or high water. So how can you undo that mess with today's news, Desi Doyen?
Well, I can't. But, hey, we'll try anyway. First, water wars in the U.S. The state of Georgia is going all out to secure water rights. The Georgia State Senate on Monday passed legislation to officially move Georgia's border with Tennessee. That's in order to claim water from the Tennessee River, and it's part of a 200-year-old border dispute. As Chattanooga Today says,
if Tennessee doesn't agree, the dispute could go before the Supreme Court. If it comes to that point, more than 30,000 Tennessee residents could wake up one morning in a new state without ever having moved.
So this is remarkable. It brings two questions to mind. One, can they legally do this? Can they just declare they're moving their own borders? Or does that really mean war? And two, how much of this is due to global warming, to a suddenly new need for water rights in the state of Georgia?
Well, to your first question, they can legally try to do it, and they'll probably have to take it all the way to the Supreme Court because Tennessee, obviously, disagrees. As to global warming, yes, the area has been in a persistent drought, part of the historic drought that has hit the U.S. over the last several years. So they're trying to secure water rights in preparation for consistent, persistent drought in coming years.
But this is Georgia, where all the denialists live. How can they, on one breath, say that we need more water because global warming is drying us out?
The Georgia Senate is not using global warming in their reasoning. They're just trying to get water rights in the middle of a persistent drought.
And finally, if there is a war, which state wears blue and which state wears gray?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
We'll look forward to it.
Bad year for butterflies.
Monarchs are in trouble. Populations are going down due to habitat loss, seriously down. We're down about half the number of monarchs at the overwintering sites than we saw in the 90s.
That was Chuck Taylor, director of Monarch Watch at the University of Kansas. A new survey of monarch butterflies shows their numbers have fallen at their winter breeding grounds in Mexico to the lowest levels since record keeping began. It's partly due to U.S. farmers who have used herbicides that have killed off the primary food source for monarch butterflies. It's also due to recent record swings in extreme weather. And it's not just monarchs in the U.S. Extreme weather is also behind the dramatic decline of butterflies in Britain this year, the lowest population of butterflies ever recorded in the United Kingdom. What's the price of an oil spill into one of the nation's most scenic rivers and a source of drinking water? $1.7 million. Just $1.7 million is all ExxonMobil will have to pay in federal civil penalties for their pipeline spill into the Yellowstone River in 2011.
Which they make in, what, 5 minutes or so?
Oh, they make over $100 million in profit every day. So this $1.7 million fine is because federal regulators say Exxon failed over an extended period of time to recognize threats to the pipeline that dumped an estimated 63,000 gallons of crude oil, fouled the water, and killed wildlife along a 70-mile stretch of the river.
It pays for these fossil fuel companies to ignore the law. And if they get caught doing it, to pay a little fine, a little slap on the wrist, and everything's fine.
Yeah, they'll hardly notice it.
Amazing.
Some good news. Apple Computers has announced it is now powering its data centers around the world with 100% renewable energy. And that's not all. In their just-released environmental report, Apple says renewable energy now powers 75% of all of its operations around the world. That's double its use of renewable energy since 2010. Finally, the host city for the next Winter Olympics is stockpiling snow. This year, winter was unseasonably warm in the northern Russian resort town of Sochi, the next host of the 2014 Winter Olympics next February. They are so worried that they won't have enough snow for next winter that they are transporting and storing some 450,000 cubic meters of snow from this winter up to the mountains nearby and are covering it with what organizers call a special thermoseal to protect it from melting during the summer.
Is this again because of global warming?
Well, it would be a reasonable assumption based on all of the studies and information that we have so far showing changes in precipitation and a warming Arctic.
Well, if you're going to start making reasonable assumptions, Rush Limbaugh is not going to be very happy. You can find more about all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that transition was a little less icky, but some of this stuff will get sorted out. This is the Horn. It is indeed Tuesday, the 26th. Of March 2013, we're live in Washington, D.C., which is part of why some things are a little bit sideways here. But all in all, we should be okay for the rest for the next hour, assuming that the audio holds up. I'm going to make a trek to Radio Shack in the morning and hopefully get some of this foolishness sorted out. I can't get that Tennessee story out of my head. the idea, and you are familiar, I mentioned Shirley Jackson's famous short story, The Lottery. You are familiar with that, right? Little nondescript town every year for reasons that they don't can't even fully express anymore. Every year they have a lottery and they draw you know, one person. Everybody has to participate, and one person gets drawn, and they then get stoned to death in order to guarantee good crop yields. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon, was the saying. It's a deeply disturbing story about how people can, well, you get the idea. And that really is what's going on in Tennessee. People have to win a lottery to get some middling amount of health care that allows them to live a little while longer. And meanwhile, the elected teabaggers in their legislature prattle on about how socialized medicine will ruin America. They're literally sacrificing human beings on the altar of their twisted right-wing beliefs. If that is not evidence of a cold civil war, I don't know what is. And in point of fact, it is evidence of a cold civil war. And it is a war being waged by the haves against the have-nots. And then, of course, there's what's going on with the Tennessee River situation in Georgia. Georgia wants to drain the Tennessee River, more or less. It's a scary country if you take time to look at it. And yet the right wing can't be bothered to consider the needs of people who are literally dying for want of health care in their thousands every year. But they can have a hissy about a video. And the right-wingers are absolutely sideways over a new video by Jim Carrey. He put out a video over at Funny or Die that, with no subtlety whatsoever, has a lot of fun at the expense of the dead Charlton Heston and gun owners generally. And the gun owners don't like it. Well, let's give a listen to what it is they're all fired upset about. Because being as it's a song, well, that makes it a little bit better for us. It is set up as a segment from the Hee Haw syndicated TV series of the late 60s and 70s. Let's give a listen.
Why did the ventriloquist quit drinking?
That's exactly like a real dummy.
Well, hi-o and howdy, fine folks, and welcome back to Hee Haw. We want to thank our special guest, Charlton Heston, for joining us.
Walter, it's an absolute pleasure to be here in the sight of God on Hee Haw. But who would be laughing if it weren't for the patriots who answer the call of freedom?
Well, I'm...
The aliens! They would exploit our every weakness and suck the brains out of every living soul. They'd be laughing, but not like you and me. They'd go...
We want to leave you with the sweetest molasses sounds of a band I'm sure you're all going to like. Hens and Roosters, Lend an Ear to Lonesome Earl and the Clutterbusters.
Some folks ride like the wind, with the whispering pines to guide them, and the burning light inside them keeps them warm in the snow. Others fear the sounds they hear, make banditos out of molehills, fill their hearts with porcupine quills. They're dead and buried long before they go. Charlton Heston movies are no longer in demand. His immortal soul may lay forever in the sand. The angels wouldn't take him up to heaven like he planned, cause they couldn't pry that gun from his cold dead hand.
What did he say?
It takes a cold dead hand to decide to pull the trigger. Takes a cold dead heart, and as near as I can figure, with your cold dead aim, you're trying to prove your dick is bigger. But we know your chariot may not be swinging low. Cold dead hand, cold dead hand.
Big man with a little bitty glance, so you need something bigger just to fill. They're making fun of everything I hold dear, Walter.
Imagine if the Lord were here and he knew what you've been thinking. Would his sacred heart be sinking into the canyon of dismay? And on the one sell the guns, he'd stick the vultures and coyotes. Only the devil's true devotees could profiteer from pain and fear. Charlton Heston movies are no longer in demand, and his immortal soul may lay forever in the sand. The angels wouldn't take him up to heaven like he planned, cause they couldn't pry that gun from his cold dead hand. It takes a cold dead hand to decide to pull the trigger. Takes a cold dead heart, and as near as I can figure, with your cold
dead hand. I'm clearly Sam Elliott. Pay attention, hombres. This boy's got something to say. Biting social satire. It goes down smooth. Enjoy the show. I'm gonna watch that sunset.
Cold dead hand. Cold dead hand. Cold dead hand. You're a big, big man with a
little bitty glance, so you need something bigger with a hairpin trigger. You don't want to get caught with your trousers down when the psycho killer comes around. So you make your home like a thunderdome, and you're always packing everywhere you roam. But the psychos win no matter what you do, because they're going to buy way more guns than you. And while you're stumbling out of bed, they put 5 rounds in the back of your head, or you get depressed because the money went south, and you put your old shotgun in your mouth, and you keep walking, and they find you there like a headless lump in your underwear, and they move the gun, and it kills them too, when your wife just doesn't know what else to do, so she takes the hand grenade from her shoe, and she bolts off and... And it's on you. And your cold, dead hand.
Well, what in the heck was that?
I accidentally shot my foot off.
Aw, shoot.
Yeah, the wing nuts don't like that even a little bitty bit. Having a straight-up hissy, are they? Talking about how his Jim Carrey's career is dead. And but that last sequence there, where it lays out the consequences of, you know, being a gun-toting, being a gun-toting, freedom-protecting patriot, it's very real. Remember, more harm is done by firearms in the home than protecting by a long shot. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, can you hear me?
I gotcha.
Oh, good. Listen, I was just sort of, Tennessee lottery. I mean, I remember quite a few years ago when they decided to sort of, destroy that statewide program. And I had no idea that it had devolved into some sort of horror show. The sort of lack of passion in the reporting too is also very disturbing. You know, I mean, you get these sort of stories out of America and it's also matter of fact. I mean, that's just horrific. I don't even know what to think of it. It's so horrible. That's the only reason why I called, because I just was looking at some of the other.
Yeah, did you go and read the New York Times story?
I looked at that one, but I also looked at a story from a blog that just talks about, you know, healthcare advocacy, not from a single payer, just information about healthcare stories, and you know, just to see if there's any different take on it. And you know, they end their story with, well, you know, if the governor will accept, you know, this Obamacare, then you get, you know, zillions of people covered by it. But I guess because of the Supreme Court, these horrifying people can say no. And this man's reason is because, oh, no, we don't want these desperate poor people to see that the government can work in any fashion. So I'll just let them die. Apparently he's getting a fair amount of pressure because he has to decide this week or something. But I feel sick that the people are valued so little that this one man can make a decision like this, and there's no mechanism at all in this country to say, hell no, you can't do this to all these people.
And I guess you couldn't even, if you were aggrieved, you couldn't even sue to compel some sort of conduct. Isn't that crazy? You've got to make a governor accept $9 billion.
No, but the idea that somehow in the collective mind, if they don't get health care, you know, that's okay. Whereas because other countries have allowed their citizens to have access to health care because they see it as a function of having a reasonable life. But here, you know, everything is dealt and you get it or you don't, or you deserve it or you don't. It doesn't matter what the service is. And something like health care, you know, like you get these people who, you know, they seem to accept that, well, it's a privilege, and, you know, if they don't have it, I guess that's just tough titty, you know. And no kind of understanding that this situation could be solved fairly easily. But instead of solving it, you demonize the people, the millions of people who don't have it, in order to keep this really horrifying system in place. I don't even, you know, I don't know. I don't know, Bob. Wow.
Maybe it's because what you said, and it's so true that people have been, we've been trained and taught and conditioned into talking about it as some sort of privilege, when the rest of the so-called civilized world recognizes access to health care as a basic human right.
Well, do you think that, I don't know. I just want any country that graduates, let's just say, for lack of any other way of describing it, to, you know, a more affluent status, like the middle-income countries, the first thing most of them try to do is to expand access to health care, like Venezuela. I mean, a huge portion of that expenditure was on that, because that is the sign of a civilized, decent, creating type of society. If you're going to have a bunch of people living together, why not join together and come up with at least health care? I mean, it's just, you think about this place, and it's really shocking here. It's unbelievably shocking, really. I mean, I have never heard of anything so, that's one of the most horrible stories I've heard, because it's perpetrated by the state. You can't get much worse than that.
No, you can't, and it doesn't seem, although we say that, and then they'll turn around and show us what's worse.
Well, no, but you know what I mean. I just mean as a sort of, it's institutionalized, and someone sat back and said, yeah, let's do a lottery. And it's accepted, and it's part of their bureaucracy. I mean, you don't think about that. That is like, wow.
I mean, what do you say on the day after you lose in the Tennessee healthcare lottery? I mean, do you look at your, you know, does this woman look at her spouse and say, it's been nice knowing you?
I have no idea. I don't know what that, all I know is that they only cover like 2,500 people. So that's like 5,000 people out of the 100,000 plus that are qualified.
Right. Now, on the Medicaid expansion, that's 180,000 people covered.
No, but, yeah, and the mentality of that governor and the other governors who aren't accepting is that, well, our citizens aren't children. That's treating them like children. I mean, this is what one said. I think it was one of the Dakotas. I can't remember his name. And I was horrified by that. It's like anything like this is deemed as some sort of, you know, stuff. You know how I like to talk about stuff?
Yeah.
That falls under stuff. And we can't have our suffering, low-income, poor folk getting access to anything that could possibly make their lives bearable, because they have to be unbearable, miserable, and, you know, just precarious forever.
It's the long, slow slide into, you know, what you said about nation states that are aspiring toward having a middle class. Well, we're kind of admitting that we don't want one of those anymore, aren't we? And so this is evidence of the slow slide and decay toward that two-class society, and I guess the fondest dreams of Grover Norquist.
Well, I mean, and you can, you know, it's too bizarre for words, because, you know, you've had state-sponsored health care, you know, since, well, whenever they gave it away to the sailors at the, you know, when the right after the Revolutionary War. I mean, you know, there's always been some idea of public health, but it's just been so, it's incredible that this country cannot get that right. And instead, we get these pockets of sort of horror shows like this in Tennessee. To me, I don't see what you call it, and I can't think of anyone in the Horn family, or actually any decent person, if they sit down and read this, is going to say, "Oh yeah, that's great, that's efficient, that's what we want to do." I don't, you know.
And yet, the question I keep coming back to, Sandra. Because, for instance, you know, it'll be on the books in California. There's not going to be any question about California adopting, opting in. They probably already have to the Medicaid expansion. In fact, I'm sure they already have. But how do you square up a nation where the definition of states' rights is the ability of any given state to condemn its own citizens to death by virtue of an accident of geographic location of birth or domicile?
But this was used to maintain segregation all the way to slavery. So the history of this way of governance is just horrifying, and as it continues, it stays horrifying, because the fact that horrible Roberts, you know, made it so that these states weren't obliged to take this money. You know, he's disgusting. Oh, my God. You know, I don't care how they cloak it. It's still, absolutely a horrifying situation. And his ruling there is also the reason why you get, like I said before, the Arkansas and the Floridas, who are demanding total privatization and 50% more in costs, or we won't take it scenarios.
Yeah, if we can't turn this into a profit vehicle for some private company, then we have no interest in doing the right thing by our working poor.
And the Obama administration will say yes, because they are determined from a political point of view to implement, you know, this signature bit of legislation that, unfortunately, we're going to see, you know, the sort of downside of it as it's rolled out. Because, you know, this is a bad, that's a bad.
Well, how much of the billions will be soaked up by these private companies' administrative fees?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but this is the thing. I know I mentioned this the last time we talked, was the sort of rents. The economy of rents, you know, where you work for a corporation, and you, so where the U.S. becomes a company town, the whole country.
Yeah.
That's what we're seem to be aspiring to, because no matter where you turn, your dollar goes from the 1% to you and right back to them.
Yeah, without hardly slowing down in your pocket.
Right. And that's what we got. And yep. So it's, you know, I don't, you know, it, nothing is framed this way in the larger media, because it's controlled by the 1%. So people are just, atomized, and they can't, you know, you can't get it together to connect the dots, but. You know, it's all really sickening.
Well, and way past that.
And, but I do wonder. I hope he's pressured, you know.
What's the end game? I mean, what is the ultimate outcome, Sandra? That's what I never understand in any of this. Where is it they're wanting to go? I mean, is it Haiti with cable? I mean, are we right?
No, I just think that you know, you, one of the main reasons, you know, for these liberal democracies that we have all over the planet is basically to control the rich. But they've removed so many of those controls in the last, you know, since Thatcher and Reagan, that they control more and more of all the resources and wealth, and we see where it's going. I mean, it's completely destructive, basically. This system we have is completely destructive, and I don't know where it's going to go, but I know that the climate catastrophe, you know, they won't be able to escape that, but they're, you know, causing it to happen a lot faster.
Right, and at the same time, they're going to fight over the Tennessee River. Did you catch that in the Green News report there a few minutes ago? They've been talking about doing this for a while, that redefining the boundary so that the Tennessee River becomes partly Georgia's.
No, I saw that, but you know, that reminded me. What was one of the sort of earlier cases that the Supreme Court dealt with? I can't remember that case. It's a really famous case. I should know it. But, you know, basically one state taking over another state. Anyway, it just sounds like this is something that is going to be – what are they going to do, start a war?
Yeah.
I mean, because they're not going to be able just to take these people's water just by moving the goalposts a bit. What in the world?
Well, see, if you fly over Georgia in the summer, you find out that there's a certain degree of desertification going on there. And like Lake Lanier, which serves as the water source for Atlanta, which is still growing, Lake Lanier is down to, I mean, it's got mud flats in it now. And they are rapidly approaching in Georgia some real live existential sustainability issues. And so they see sucking the Tennessee River dry as a solution of some sort.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess that's something to follow. I don't.
But that's the Georgia legislature. The Tennessee legislature, meanwhile, you know, we're sitting here talking about the fact that they've got a life or death lottery for health care. Inside the teabag-dominated Republican Tennessee legislature, they're all in a, I don't know if you saw this or not, but they're all in a dither because there's a mop sink, where you rinse out the mop when you're mopping the floor. There's a mop sink.
Oh, they thought that was some place for people to wash their feet?
Yeah, it's a Sharia Muslim foot washing sink.
That's right. I did see that, but it's just so I just couldn't even wrap my head around how ignorant and disturbing that is. Yeah, did someone clear it up for him?
Well, I mean, I guess they're trying. But the problem with the Sharia law paranoia is that there's never a rational explanation. That's the mop sink. That's so the maintenance guy can get this place cleaned out of a night after you guys are done tramping through all day. Now it's a mop sink. Well, it sure looks like a Sharia foot washing sink to me.
Oh my God! And I mean, are these Muslims that they're worried about? Do they come out at night to wash their feet? I mean, what is? I mean, are they? I don't. You know, it's just
they only foot wash at night.
It's so bizarre. I don't even understand the mentality. But you know, you really, really just want to stay away.
Representative Judd Matheny became troubled that the sink could be for Muslims. There was a concern about why the sink had been modified. I just asked the question about what was the intent of that. So the legislative administration director, Connie Ridley, assured the lawmakers in an email that the facility administrator for the state capitol complex that the floor-level sink installed in the men's restroom outside the House chamber is for housekeeping use. It is, in layman's terms, a mop sink.
Wow.
And then this other right-wing freak, Bill Ketron, said, well, that explanation satisfied my curiosity after it was presented to me.
Oh, man. That's stunning.
Oh, but it gets better. This Matheny freak, this right-winger, is concerned about, said he was concerned about the sink because Tennessee, like the federal government, has a compelling state interest to protect our citizens from jihad terrorism. You know, from foot washing.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, this stuff just occupies their, pea brains, 24-7 from the sounds of it.
How can you worry about whether or not your citizens are living and dying when you're absolutely convinced in your own tiny little mind that the biggest thing you've got to worry about is foot washing Muslims coming in and taking over your government with their Sharia? Healthcare is going to seem piddling by comparison, because tomorrow all our freedom's going to be gone. We're going to have to pray toward Mecca.
Yeah. Oh my God. No. Speaking of another dumb town, I hear that Steubenville?
Steubenville.
That the citizens are getting a petition to save the coach's job. That's the latest out of that hellhole.
You mean his job is actually in jeopardy?
Well, I was wondering why he was. I didn't know.
My thing. You know, why is it? Yeah, what's his name? Scratch it. I don't. This guy was the enabler for all of it.
Yeah, he should have been fired right away. But he's still now. You know, I don't know if they were about to fire him or what. But yeah, there's a petition drive to keep him there. I mean. It is sort of, you know, it's just like, oh, my God, can I just keep my little nieces inside until they're, I don't know, 28?
Yeah, right. And certainly don't let them pass the territorial borders of California.
Well, I mean, since, you know, you don't even have any, you know, since you're told that, you know, women are in control of not only their own sexuality, but every man out there. I mean, it's a bit of a slog, Bob. And I don't mean to be, you know, flippant, but that is the mentality, is that, you know, men, they don't know how to control themselves, so we women have to kind of sort them out. And it's just like, hello? Why don't they sort their own fucking selves out?
You're not right.
I don't know. I'm kind of confused by the mentality that...
Well, that's like what I was talking about earlier with all this gay marriage, all the gay marriage arguments. You know, the right-wingers are always worried about, you know, one man and four women and polygamy. Why don't they ever worry about one woman and four men? I mean, that could be a marriage too, couldn't it? You know, like I said, perfect golf foursome. You know, you got division of labor. You know, you do the plumbing. I'll take care of the electricity. But I think it's always a manifestation of whatever their weirdest kinks are.
Well, I mean, I saw this sort of public service announcement. Don't get me wrong. I suppose it's good to see, but it was like this. I don't know if you've seen it. There was this girl. She's obviously drunk on the couch, you know, passed out. And this dude comes over into the camera and says, wait until you see what I'm going to do to her. Well, what he does, he puts a cover on her, a pillow underneath her, and a glass of water, and he just sort of walks away. And it's sort of like, oh, okay. So I got the idea of it. But a part of me is thinking, oh my God! You know, this has to be taught to these Neanderthals? You know, I know it's wrong because it is a good point, but it just left me a bit disturbed again. It's just like I'm just thinking the humanity factor is what's bothering me, that we're so far gone that something like that is so amazing to see that you're like, oh wow. That's just great. Now I'm thinking, please, you know?
Yeah. a little.
I mean, it's like, no. Oh my God, that's what we've been reduced to.
Oh, and Ron and Raleigh just wrote in. I think you'll get a kick out of his take on this. The Tennessee legislators and the mop sink and the muslin foot washing and everything. He said it tells you something, doesn't it? He said these goobers have never seen a damn mop sink. I've specified them and I've used them. These assholes haven't done a day's work in their lives.
That's a good point. And yeah, how disgusting. The other thing that was bugging me is, did this pass or is this something in the works? Maybe you know, but you can't get an abortion after 6 weeks in North Dakota.
Yeah, that's passed.
Right. Is that straight to court then?
Oh yeah. That won't even see the light. I mean, that'll get an immediate injunction pending full hearing.
They're using the heartbeat. That's their guidepost, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
I mean, you can't. You can't even tell whether you're pregnant or not until 6 weeks.
I just thought, wow, they really are,
But the thing is, Sandra, they passed a whole raft of bills about abortion. They've got a trap bill, you know, where they overregulate. To make sure that a clinic can't be open because, you know, all clinics must have 15-foot-wide corridors, you know, that kind of silliness.
Right, and operating room-type standards, yeah.
And hospital privileges for the doctors. And
Right.
Yeah, they've got a personhood amendment on their 2014 November ballot.
But that lost even in Mississippi. So when they did that down there,
That's true, and it may lose here. But no, already signed into law: HB 1305, HB 1456, and SB 2305. Fetal heartbeat in 1456. 2305 is the trap bill, targeted regulation of abortion providers. And these are fiscal conservatives who are doing this, Sandra. You know, these are people who are worried about, you know, paying too much tax and all of that stuff. But, okay, so they're going to have an absolutely pointless legal fight over something that they did that was illegal the moment that the governor signed it.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just relentless. But, you know, what is it? Is it 1 in 5 children in this country or, you know, don't get enough to eat every day?
Yeah, 1 in 5, 1 in 6.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's just, tells you all it is about just controlling, you know, women.
Yeah.
It's so over the top, though, but it's just relentless.
One in six American children are affected by unemployment.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, it's stunning. I mean, with the reproductive stuff, like, there's a lot of states now where there's one or two places, literally, where you can go to get services now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just wonder what these women are doing, you know?
Well, and, you know, here in D.C., I'm just a stone's throw away from one of the oldest buildings in this area, and it is now the museum headquarters of the Women's Suffrage Museum. And just outside on the signs, they show some of the brutal conditions women were subjected to for even daring to stand up and demand the vote. And yet at the same time, you know, here we are not quite 100 years on from that moment. And, you know, again, you know, screaming women all over the place up at the Supreme Court today. Hollering about how, you know, two guys shouldn't be able to pick out a China pattern or or a pair of women get a monogram bathroom towels or whatever. It's some sort of, I don't know if it's a kind of attenuation or we see our rights, but we're blind to those of others that are being taken away.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing with those black folks, you know, I just shake my head on that. I'm like, OMG, really?
Yeah, because, you know, I wasn't going to get myself arrested or be an overt asshole or anything, but I really did. I wanted to walk up and say, well, I'm sorry, you're protesting in the whites only protest area. You'll need to go to the black folks protest area back there behind the building.
There's so much. I mean, I'm not even going to touch it because I'll just get myself in trouble because there's so many things wrong with that whole scenario. But listen, I'll let you go, but I do want to mention that I don't know what day it is, but them banks are still closed.
Really?
And by the way, you know, they made a huge mistake when they – I found out that it was the people in Cyprus, the elite there, that decided, oh, no, we got to hit the under $100,000 deposits too, you know, because of the amount that these rich bastards are going to lose. Now, to me, if it's not uninsured – they really don't have a bad idea because they got to wind down these banks. And today they're saying, well, no, they're going to lose like 80%. They may get 20% back in 6 years. So.
Oh, Jesus.
But also know that billions got out of Cyprus because, by the way, the London office of these banks weren't closed.
Oh, well, that's convenient.
Right. So they estimated that billions or at least a billion left already. And anyway, that situation is pretty nasty. And a lot of people are speculating that there's a run on the banks in the periphery at the moment. But because everything is electronic, you know, the capital flight is kind of going from a trickle to a stream, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. And meanwhile, I don't know if you saw it or not, but that idiot O'Reilly was talking, and he said, you know, these people, these European countries, these Italy, Greece, you know, Portugal, they're going south because they're nanny states.
Oh, no, but that's the problem with this place. He has a platform to just lie because, you know, we all know that all that bailout is going to recapitalize their banks. So the people, it's nothing to do with the nanny state. It's all about the rich and the banks not wanting to take a hit. That's what it's about.
Right.
And that's why the Cyprus thing is interesting, because the Germans have now decided, well, your ass can bail in, not out. So, no. I mean, I think it's I don't know. And the whole thing about the Russian money, you know, that's a bunch of BS, too, because all that money, you know, left, too. So Cyprus is just going to be – they're going to be subjected to the same kind of austerity as the Greeks, and the people are going to just suffer. You know, it's a horror show.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe they can have a health care lottery.
Well, but I mean, in the meanwhile, though, you know, the coalition government in England is, I don't know if you paid attention to this at all, but they have this bedroom tax. They're cutting in care home for disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just.
It's self-brutalizing.
It's brutal what's going on in England at the moment. I was like, wow, you know.
And the question is, at what point does it boil over, or are we just, you know, are we that, have we given up on the idea of demanding accountability from governments run amok?
Oh, well, no, that shit in England is, I mean, you know, you had the little riots, they were freaking out. That's going to boil over again, no doubt, because, you know, the level of punishment that they're subjecting people to is pretty outrageous, and they cut the top income tax from.
Well, and see, and there's a timing thing too, Sandra, because remember that awful woman is going to go and give birth to her little royal monster. And the whole nation will be wall to wall media coverage about how the precious little billionaire at birth, it'll be, you know, he weighed this much and he was this long and look at his tiny crown and right at some point.
Oh, no, that's disgusting. Yeah.
But I mean, but I know that's going to be the nature of the coverage.
Oh yeah, that's what I call the low risk. You know, people don't have no risk in life.
Yeah. Yeah, born on third base thinking they hit a triple.
Yeah, that bitch get a headache and she's rushed to the hospital. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so, you know, and that family does not have the good grace not to rub it in.
Oh, no, that's why I was laughing. Remember when Charles and that woman he's with, when they were attacking his cab there?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That was funny. You know, but no, I think there's going to be more of that because they've decided to turn England into what we have over here. But the thing with England, they have even less kind of wealth than, you know, the U.S. You know what I mean? They don't have the sort of resources that we have. And so they're going to make all their young people pay for university now, and they're trying to privatize more of the healthcare.
Right, because, you know, developing the intellect of one's youth, you know, why the hell would that be valuable? Yeah, let's, by all means, you know, run up the tuition, make sure less people can go to university. That's a surefire path to success, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, here in this country, we decided to load every student up with debt. And I guess the idea is, just another way to transfer more wealth to those same people I'm always talking about now.
Exactly.
Anyway, listen, you have a good evening.
All right, thanks, Sandra. It's awful good to hear from you.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. By the way, Sandra got fan mail. I meant to share this with her. Diane wrote in. She said, I love it when Sandra calls. She's brilliant. I'm listening now on TuneIn Radio. Diane in Kansas. Thanks for the note, Diane. Thank you very much. That'll make Sandra smile. Sandra's got a lot of fans. Jack in Shreveport writing in under the heading Polygamy Weirdness. One possibility the right-wingers only consider one man with multiple wives rather than one woman with multiple husbands is that the nutbags also seem to be obsessed with increasing the population as much as possible. Maybe that's it. No, but see, the other part of that, the part that went unstated, is that most of these wingnuts and weirdos and stuff, you know, they'd be happy if they had a little peephole in a lesbian couple's closet because they like to watch. They think that's sexy, that girl-on-girl thing. But they're afraid if it was a marriage with, you know, multiple husbands, well, they might gay me up. Remember, because that's why they're worried about gay marriage in the first place. It's going to damage their heterosexual marriage, and they're going to have to run off and get all gay. Writing in about Tennessee, Phillip says, I can't solely blame the Tennessee governor for the rejection of federal funds for health care. Who are the majority of Tennesseans voting for him and deciding that only some in their state should have access to health care? The Supreme Court decision on Obamacare reminds me to some extent of the Emancipation Proclamation. If you were a slave in the Confederate South, you were freed, but it didn't apply to slaves in the North. Depending on the whims of your state leaders, you may be excluded from Obamacare. I have to conclude that the majority of Tennessee have no concept of community compassion or empathy when I consider whom they elect to represent them. We need to hold the citizenry responsible for their complicity or apathy as much as we need to denounce despicable politicians. Why is it always the poorest states that strive to keep their populations oppressed? Then again, I have no faith in capitalism, so I do have my biases, Phillips says. Biases, indeed. In Tennessee, says Jack in Shreveport, a person could literally watch their neighbor waste away from cancer or go bankrupt or both while being able to receive a doctor's care or have a stay in the hospital merely because the first person happened to get through on the phone while the other did not. And these two people would have to look each other in the eye every day. Or maybe not. Thanks, Jack. And Ron just says, hey, Bob, remember, you can't feed them because they're like stray dogs. That's what the guy in South Carolina said. P.S., if you want to see raw pig-licking power grabs, watch North Carolina. It gets weirder by the day, he says. So thanks, everybody, for joining in. Sorry about the technical glitches. All help at the PayPal button is appreciated. We are behind by about $300 now. And thanks very much for the contribution. Angry Architect, much appreciated. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.